This morning, Wallace and I were awoken because a herd of cows surrounded the camper. And that doesn't bother me. I used to work on a ranch. But to Wallace, they're just really big, angry, stupid, fat wolves. And yeah, so he freaked out. So it was kind of traumatic for him. But all that being said, now we've been hiking all over. 2 days ago, we went on a 5-hour hike through forests and mountains. And I was going to do a bunch of research, but I ended up just reading a lot and hiking. It's been great. I feel renewed.
You're a strange person, but I feel like this is a good thing for you. This is what a strange person would do, is just go to the middle of nowhere and commune with nature and your dog.
You know what? Normal, happy people like you, I understand why that would be weird, but I guarantee there are lots of people out there for whom the idea of intermittent internet access precluding email or Twitter for days at a time is actually really nice, where I get to an internet zone again, or a zone where I've got actual bars on my phone, and then I have to text 40 people, hey, I'm sorry, I've been in the woods, I could not respond to you.
So it
was nice. I don't know, it feeds some part of me that likes being out in nature.
I don't think it's weird at all. I've definitely done it, and I need to do it a couple times a year for precisely that reason. I want to be completely unreachable.
Jen, here's what I want you to do. You and your husband need to get a camper and a ukulele and meet me in Southern Colorado, and we'll just have a good old time camping.
I wouldn't know what to do with the ukulele, but the camper part, you know, I'm already down.
We'll use it for firewood. It's just kindling.
Wait, doesn't that ruin the point of being alone if you're going to be with other people?
When people say, oh, I love camping, and you're like, oh, great, I'm going in 2 weeks, do you want to go camping? They go, oh, no, not really. That sounds like a hassle. People like the idea of an L.L. Bean catalog, but actually going out and camping is pretty rare. I would love to go camping with people. That sounds great. It's more fun with a dog. I assume people are even more fun than Wallace. It's being away from civilization that appeals to me. I don't mind having people around.
Okay, when I come to Austin, we'll go camping because Joe and I love it.
Yeah. Miss me with all that shit. If it ain't got Wi-Fi, I don't like it. And that includes my childhood. My name is Justin Robert Young. She is Jen Briney. He is Andrew Heaton. And we're not wrong. We've got a lot of stories that we are not wrong about this week, including the January 6th committee. It's back. It's back. I challenged Jen to find something that was new or interesting. She says she's found it. We will debate whether or not it is. There's a trend that is happening right now in politics that I want to run by the rest of the crew here, specifically whether or not it is cool to spend money on a fringe candidate, specifically on the Democratic side, if that fringe candidate is a super MAGA Republican, to try and split the support for what they view to be a more dangerous moderate Republican. And the war in Ukraine has officially entered the celebrity phase. Ben Stiller visited with the president this week. What does that mean to the growing sentiment of Ukraine fatigue, which the president was asked about earlier this week? Jen, how are you doing?
I'm excellent. How are you? Did you watch any of the January 6th hearing?
Does clips on Twitter count?
I don't think so. No.
The only thing we were watching or discussing in the woods came up all the time over the last couple of days.
Yeah, Heaton, by the way, for those of you who are not aware, is currently somewhere in an undisclosed location in Santa Fe, New Mexico, driving back from a week-long camping trip. But it looks like you're we can't see you, but your voice is holding up.
Yeah, well, I apologize. The camera's not working. But yes, I've even purchased a cell phone signal booster so that we can do this seamlessly. And prior to this, the last 5 days, I've been kind of around Del Norte, Colorado, on national forest land. It was desolate enough that I think I saw one human being per day drive by. So a rate of about one person per day where I was at. And I've read up on this a little bit, Jen. I was not able to watch any footage of this.
Okay.
Well, here we go. If you are a fan of the January 6th committee, congratulations. It has hit series renewal. The committee announced that they are expanding the scope of it as they're issuing new subpoenas based on the stuff that they have talked about over the last few days. One of the biggest was Tuesday's edition, which focused on the efforts of Trump 2020 to affect the outcome of the election after Joe Biden was projected the winner. After cajoling the Georgia Secretary of State to find out, to find what the Trump team believed were illegitimate votes, the brain trust of Rudy Giuliani and lawyer John Eastman began to fixate on the certification of the election as a final opportunity to change the outcome. That would rely on enough states being able to select their own slate of electors to send to Washington to certify the election for Trump instead of Biden. There's more complications to that, but that's the general idea. Eastman wrote what he believed to be the legal justification for this on November 28th, after detailing what he believed to be states breaking their own laws by extending deadlines and implausible data that was favorable to Biden with mail-in ballots. He had the following to say, and I quote, "These statistical anomalies, particularly when combined with hard evidence of voters barred from voting because somebody had, unbeknownst to them, requested and at times even voted in absentee ballots in their name, strongly support the conclusion that something is amiss here. And the legislature simply," in italics, "must investigate. And then if convinced that the election was too fraught with risk of fraud to properly be certified, exercise their prerogative to legislatively designate a slate of electors." Furthermore, the committee showed a text between staffer. Well, here, you want to, before we get into the text here, Jen, this was something for which you were fascinated by and had not heard of before, right?
Yeah. So, I haven't been following it all that closely in these months. So it's like, I knew about the Georgia phone call that he was pressuring elections officials. This latest January 6th hearing, I watched the beginning of it, where they had the speaker of the House in the state of Arizona, who is being pressured to bring the Arizona state legislature back in order to switch out their electors, which he refused to do. But also in that part of the hearing is where we really saw the bigger picture of this fake electors thing. And I had no idea how far they went with it. So I actually took this morning, I got it under 2 minutes, but I clipped the part of the hearing that really blew me away. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, play it and then we'll drop it into the podcast so it'll be clean audio for them.
Yes, definitely.
My name is Casey Lucier. I'm an investigative counsel for the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. The Select Committee received testimony that those close to President Trump began planning to organize fake electors for Trump in states that Biden won in the weeks after the election. At the president's direct request, the RNC assisted the campaign in coordinating this effort. The committee learned the White House counsel's office also felt the plan was potentially illegal. Ultimately, fake electors did meet on December 14, 2020 in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New Mexico, Nevada, and Wisconsin. At the request of the Trump campaign, the electors from these battleground states signed documents falsely asserting that they were the, quote, duly elected electors from their state and submitted them to the National Archives and to Vice President Pence in his capacity as President of the Senate. But these ballots had no legal effect. The Select Committee interviewed several of the individual fake electors.
I was told that these would only count if a court ruled in our favor. So that would have been using our electors, it would have been using our electors in ways that we weren't told about, and we wouldn't have supported.
Documents produced to the Select Committee show that the Trump campaign took steps to ensure that the physical copies of the fake electors' electoral votes from two states were delivered to Washington for January 6th. A staffer for Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson texted a staffer for Vice President Pence just minutes before the beginning of the joint session. This staffer stated that Senator Johnson wished to hand deliver to the vice president the fake electors' votes from Michigan and Wisconsin. The vice president's aide unambiguously instructed them not to deliver the fake votes to the vice president.
So I learned a few things there that I didn't know. First of all, I had no idea that the RNC was involved in this. I also had no idea that in six states they actually did meet, have these little meetings of fake electors that they forged documents, submitted them. Like, I guess I assumed that it was a lot of talk from the Trump people, but that didn't really go anywhere. But they really, like, they tried to submit different electors because of the Electoral Count Act of 18, I think it's 1877 or 1887,
yeah,
which, you know, the whole point of that was it was right after the Civil War. And there were a few states that, like, didn't know what their government was. And so they sent in two sets of electors from, yeah, like, you know, one's the slavery government, one's the we don't want slavery government. And the Constitution didn't know what to do with that situation. And so that's why sending in a second set of electors and just presenting that there's a question would trigger this to go to the courts. And then Trump had a, you know, appointed a bunch of judges and has kind of stacked the Supreme Court. So it's like you can see the plan. And I guess what I didn't realize that there were lawyers making this happen, that they recruited actual humans to sit around a table and forge documents and tricked them into it. I just feel like the bigger picture, I didn't know it until yesterday. And I think it's a big deal.
Let me just give one more piece of context and then we can get Heaton's opinion here. The staffer from Senator Ron Johnson to a staffer to Mike Pence that was referenced there obviously became big news on Twitter when it happened. Alexa Henning, the current spokeswoman for Ron Johnson, said the senator had no involvement in the creation of an alternate slate of electors and had no foreknowledge that it was going to be delivered to our office. This was a staff-to-staff exchange. His new chief of staff contacted the vice president's office. That is it. The case is closed. So that is what their statement is. Take it for what you will. And what do you take it for, Andrew Heaton?
Am I just talking about Ron Wyden, or am I talking about the
Ron Johnson, sorry. I did write it wrong.
We're not yet talking about the cadre of traitors and dupes. We're only talking about Johnson.
We can talk about whatever you'd like.
So I'll say Johnson, based on what we have so far, there's not any evidence that would directly link him to conspiracy based on what we've seen so far. And I am inclined to use due process and innocent until proven guilty for everybody, including Trumpists that I don't like. Now, when it comes to the people that actually were alternate or fake electors, those are at worst traitors to the Republic, at best dupes who engaged in willful criminal activity. In either way, they should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. To elaborate a little bit on what Jen was talking about, the Eastman memo is deeply insidious. The plan was, as Jen notes, to have dueling electors sent from specifically battleground states. And then the plan was for Mike Pence to go, oh man, Arizona sent two sets of electors. Well, we're going to just not count Arizona at all. And then keep going through and don't count any of these battleground states that we're going to send alternate delegates there. And then what would happen is, rather than having the Electoral College be all of the states, it would just be the states that had been counted. And if you're only counting the states that were counted, you're knocking out these seven states that are mentioned in the Eastman memo. In that case, Trump wins by 10 electoral votes. And if it was further disputed under constitutional law at that point, it would be kicked to the House. And the House would vote for president based on state delegations, not based on members. In which case, Trump wins by, I think, one vote or something like that. Either way, this was a willful attempt to subvert the election and kick it non-democratically to an unelected presidential candidate. It is deeply disturbing. It is something that attacks the foundation of the Republic. And I want to talk a little bit to the Republicans real quick and to the independents and the libertarians who are perhaps less inclined towards screeds a la the Democratic Party. I totally get the vantage point of all politicians are crooks. I tend to take that sentiment myself, but we're not talking about day-to-day misdemeanor type politician crook stuff. We're talking about felony politician crook stuff. This is not lying about speeding tickets and fudging a little bit of numbers in a campaign letter. This is felony level, big picture, trying to undermine an election willfully. The people that participated in this are criminals at best. At worst, they're goddamn traitors. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say they're merely criminals. Here's why they're criminals. There are seven states that are mentioned in the Eastman memo. Two of those states, I'm not going to say the people in it are criminals. That would be Pennsylvania and New Mexico, because the alternate electors in both of those states specified in the paperwork that they turned into the archives that they were an alternate elector being submitted in the event that a court case overturned the existent electors. So in their case, while they might well have been participating in something shady, legally speaking, they didn't violate any laws. They said that they were alternate delegates in the event of a court case overturning the existing delegates. For the other five states, however, they said that they were the duly elected and qualified electors of their state, which is patently and legally false. If you are not elected by the people and then in your state qualified by the governor or the secretary of state, depending on what the laws are in your state, you are not legally qualified. You are not duly elected and qualified by the laws of your own state. None of them were. Second, if they're claiming that they were alternate delegates in the event that a court case overturned them, fine. Court cases all failed, and yet they still persisted with this this charade. The point at which the court said, those are the actual electors, there is not going to be an overturn here. At that point, you should have stood down, and you didn't. You still tried to go through with this, and by doing so, you committed conspiracy against a federal election, and you should go to jail.
Amen.
And that is something that I've heard for months, and I agree with you, but it's not new.
But Justin, are you really telling me that you knew the extent of this, that they had these people actually submit all these documents
I knew a step worse. I knew that the person who lost the election was controlling people, duly elected officials, members of Congress to submit and not certify the election at the time. I was at a rally in Dalton, Georgia, when Kelly Loeffler came out, a senator from Georgia who was about to lose within the next 24 hours, as it happens, who came out to cheers to say that she was not going to certify the election in the state of Georgia. So if I know that, I know that this guy is doing that. I know that this guy has gotten people in higher up, more to lose positions to sacrifice their own dignity to go along with this plan, which I did not think had much of a shot of working, but I do agree with Heaton's categorization of it being as insidious as it is, then while I was aware that there were these electors that were being gathered, I think that that is evidence that is detailing evidence underneath the larger thing, which I was already well aware of. And I've been aware of since before January 6th.
But I mean, this is your phrase, not mine, but you have admitted that you have political brain worms, that like you pay attention to in a degree that like most people don't. You don't see value in these details being laid out in this way not writing.
I see that there is value in this in the exploration of exactly where this went. That's fine. I just don't necessarily think that it is the I don't think it really moves the needle politically. I do think that it is largely being presented in an unfortunately political way. It is here to discredit and disqualify Donald Trump in the minds of voters, which is fine. I just don't think that it necessarily is effective there.
I have proof that at least on one person in this country that it is, because I spent some time with a double Trump voter, voted in 2016 and 2020.
Yeah.
And so
they didn't vote twice in 2020. That'd be a different kind of double Trump voter. It was two successive elections.
That's what Trump
don't
would
tell
like,
Eastman.
But no. But I talked to this person. I said, you know, you supported them in 2020. Would you support him in 2024 after all of this? And she said, absolutely not. So I think that this is treason. This is treason trying to overthrow the election.
Yes.
I think it will matter to sane non-MAGA Republicans.
Well, let me clarify. That is not to say that I think that Donald Trump is going to win in 2024. And I do think that largely politically, if he were not a reactionary animal and were somebody that had, I think, a political foresight, he would have pivoted away from even talking about this stuff and talked about stuff that was politically relevant to people. Whether or not Donald Trump wins anything going forward, whether or not he runs going forward, to me is immaterial. Then I wish that this was being produced in a way. I do wish that this came out more like the 9/11 commission, that it was something slightly more sober than what we are seeing here with the kind of people here. It just bothers me that Schiff is even involved, because to me, he is the mascot of a lot of trumped up, very political versions of these kinds of events, specifically involving Donald Trump. I think it immediately turns off a certain segment of the populace. And while a lot of this is something that we should remember, it is something that we should be cognizant of. It is something that we should, if they tried to exploit a hole in the Electoral Count Act, then yes, this should be looked at the very least as something that is a instruction manual on how we should reform the Electoral Count Act. So nobody even has the idea that this is possibly a loophole to do anything else with. But we're kind of getting something that I think, especially if it drags on for more than the week and a half that it's scheduled to go from here, as we are talking, that you are in danger of this becoming even more politicized and stretching into Benghazi territory.
Entirely this possible.
I don't think this is Benghazi territory, because that was... This is something
a horrifying
that really
thing that had horrifying details, and we're going to litigate every element. Well,
like we said last time, this can be. Let's use a different scenario here. Two candidates are running for mayor, and one of the candidates committed murder, and the other candidate keeps dragging it out, right? And he doesn't really bring it up because he cares about the murder so much. He just wants to win the election. Both of these things can be simultaneously true. The person that keeps bringing up the murder accusations can be doing it entirely for selfish political reasons. And also the murder can be bad and be worth prosecuting and talking about. In terms of whether it'll be impactful, I kind of doubt it. The latest stats that I saw were that only about 20% of Republicans are tuning into this, which would seem to be about the same amount that don't like Trump to begin with. So I don't know that it's going to make a big difference with Republicans. But
I think it was 34% across party lines were listed as saying paying somewhat or very much attention to this.
I do wish this were making a bigger impact. Like I care far, far more about this than the January 6th incursion, because this is the actual willful orchestrated thing as opposed to a mob. And, I'll say I tried to do due diligence on this gang. I listened to Breitbart News, which I am not a fan of, yesterday, and went through various Trumpy organizations to try and get their vantage point on this. Where I will give them a little ground is they bring up that one of the people on the committee, I think it's Zoe Lofgren, a Democrat from California, in 2004 had sent a letter to the Justice Department or somebody, saying that Ohio's votes for George W. Bush should be thrown out because there were questions about the legitimacy of the election. So doing basically the same thing.
The die-balled voting machine.
Right. And my response to that is absolutely fuck that lady, too. Like anybody engaging in this is a shit person. And like we need to get out of this mindset of black hats and white hats, good team, bad team. In this equation we're talking about, there were a lot of really bad Republicans. There were also some really good Republicans who held their ground and actually stood by the law and did not allow the thing to be subversive. So trying to turn it into this whataboutism partisan bullshit is not the way we should be approaching this. There were criminal activities and conspiracies going on with a particular group of people. And those are the people that we should be focused on and knocking out. And when we find examples of Democrats doing bad things, yes, they are also bad. And if they ever get to the point where it goes from being this shit-heeled kind of undermining democracy from the sidelines, which happens occasionally where both parties will question these electoral legitimacy to acting upon it, then we've gone from the guy at the bar saying he would do something illegal to actually doing it. And then we should prosecute them too.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, I want to, Justin, I get what you're saying about how this is being presented. It sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like the substance of what they're investigating, you see value in that, but the way they're doing it feels political and gross. And
I've seen value in it. I mean, I followed this story from as it was evolving, and it is a very serious story. It's also at times a very comical story, because the masterminds at the top of this are Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, and they are not exactly, they're far more Boris
the
and Natasha
and Shirley of the, the legal
like,
world.
Like they are comical foils who are continually light bombs that blow up in their face. There is an element here that is bizarre. There's an element here that is very serious. This is a very serious shading of it. What I I wish for
me. I can't wait for the movie.
See, I know. But that's the thing is like, for me, I wish that this was presented a little bit more soberly. I wish that we had more of a direct roadmap of it. I wish that this wasn't strung out to look, if this was a week, if this was 5 days and it was just boom, 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 all killer, no filler. Let's play the supercuts of all this stuff. And let's get to the point immediately, as opposed to what happens in Congress. And you know this better than anybody, Jen, that if they smell any kind of interest in the American public, they are going to stretch this out as long as possible because it means more screen time for them. And that's where it's like, that's where I compare it to Benghazi. Not because I think that this is less serious, not because I think that Benghazi was less serious. I thought Benghazi was something that very much deserved the focus of the national attention. Benghazi became a parody when everybody started repeating the same shit that we knew over and over and over and over again. And that's what I would not like this to be. I would like this to just be a shining example, and we know what happened and we move on from there, because I don't think that in terms of political viability, there's much to gain. Everybody's got their opinions baked in on this.
So I just don't feel like I have the facts on this. And the fact that every single time I turn it on, I learn something new. I just disagree that we're in the territory of Benghazi where we're just repeating stuff, because I learned a lot yesterday. So that's one thing. As for the personnel involved, I think you're absolutely right. Seeing Adam Schiff's face yesterday, I think hurt the entire thing, because after Russiagate and the impeachments, he's lost all credibility. He's the worst.
Because he's out on TV again yesterday saying, we've got a lot of evidence that you just haven't seen. And it's like, this is the same thing you said before. And when it never showed up, like you can only promise me a pony so many times, Adam.
But I'm seeing ponies. I'm seeing ponies, and I pay more attention than most people do to this.
Those
and I'm seeing ponies
should go to jail.
Yeah. But I do want to point out that as grossed out as we are about Adam Schiff, there's only two Republicans on this committee. We have Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney. The Republicans were welcome to staff half of this thing and chose not to. So if it feels Democrat heavy, there is a reason for that. And it was a choice.
It was Kevin McCarthy's choice to not. A, there was a plan on the table to make this a fully bipartisan thing. They rejected that because they said this was just going to get dragged out into the midterms, which I guess that premise on some level for them has been validated. They then had the opportunity on a Democratic-led panel to put people on it. And McCarthy decided not to do it. And among the people pissed off about his decision not to do it, Donald Trump, who went on his listserv and said that it was a mistake to not put Jim Jordan on this so he could do Jim Jordan things while Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger everybody else do, and Adam Schiff do Adam Schiff things. So
yeah, and that was a deliberate thing.
But then again, I don't
thing.
Think that would have made this any better. I think that would have made this worse. I think it just would have made it louder and longer, and it would have drawn something that I do think is important. Let me make this clear. I very much believe that the details, no matter how much of Rudy's brain was leaking out of his ears during that sweaty press conference, I do think that even a plan instituted by buffoons, if looking to subvert American democracy is something that we desperately need to look into, it is the presentation of this for which I think has drawn it into an unnecessarily political and grandstanding environment that I believe cheapens the findings.
Okay, that's fair.
Entirely possible. I won't put it past the Democratic Party to grandstand and do things merely to further their political ambitions.
That said, they're planning to have two more of these in July now that weren't scheduled before. And they're sending subpoenas out to new people. So this is an ongoing investigation. And so if this drags out because we do find out new things, like that's kind of the point. So again, I think we have to reserve judgment.
Maybe they do. Maybe they do. I just kind of feel like there's nothing that I have learned that is any more horrifying than watching a senator from Georgia go out in front of a crowd and for an applause line to try and get elected, say she's not going to certify the election. Like that to me is more impactful than Eastman getting a bunch of people to sign some dumb papers, no matter how much they believed or not that the election in their state had serious questions about it. Because I also think that the ability to have those beliefs that the election wasn't right is fully within your rights as an American. We sure. have done it forever.
And we want to have that. If an election actually is rigged, if it actually is overtaken by hostile or malicious forces, absolutely. I, as an American, want the ability to call a whistle on that and say those things. All true. However, we should point out here that the election in question here was only questioned by the Trump campaign, specifically in battleground states, specifically in battleground counties, that all of the judges in all 34 cases threw them out as groundless, and that all investigation that's taken place by the federal government run by Trump at the time determined that it was groundless.
Yes. No, and let me get back to your larger point, Eden. All of politics, dare I say, all of America needs to learn how to lose better.
Yes.
We are in a national deficit of not being able to eat the L. Just suck it up. You lost. It's the score. I don't care if the ref is paid off.
I'm afraid to endorse.
Look at the scoreboard.
I'm such a loser. I'm afraid to endorse candidates I like because it's like, well, that's a kiss of death. If I actually endorse them, like literally, as I think you two know, I was the very last public personality to endorse Andrew Yang before he dropped out. Like literally, like within 4 hours of me going,
Andrew Yang's for me.
He dropped out.
We were in New Hampshire together and I went to go cover something else and Heaton went to go cover Yang. And then we come back and we meet for like lunch and he's like, oh, you know, I love Andrew Yang. I'm going to endorse Andrew Yang. Tweets out, I endorse Andrew Yang. We're 4 hours later. We're at the bar at the Hyatt or the Hilton, watching the results. And as the results come in, Andrew Yang is quitting the race, and we just rush over to the bar just to see the dying embers of the Yang gang because Andrew's his endorsement had been so disastrous.
Yep.
Oh, all right. Well,
I think to add a little bit of substance to that, like I think the with these fake electors trying to do that, my suspicion is that they fall into one of two camps. Either they really did believe that the election was rigged and that because it was rigged, they were justified in breaking the law, which, again, I need to be very clear on this. They broke the law and they thought breaking the law was justified. I am going to say on the flip side, that was a bad miscalculation on their part and they should be thrown in the clink anyway, because the investigations have not confirmed that and you broke the law. So you go to jail. But there's another group, too, that I think is far more insidious than just being a partisan fuckwit, which is the folks who believe that the other team, whatever the other team is, and this goes for Democrats, Republicans, whoever, right, who believe that the other side is so monstrous, the only way we can effectively compete against them is to become monsters. And that means that we're not going to obey the rules. We're going to break the law because they would do it worse than we did. Right. And those folks, I truly fear and despise. And I suspect that there was a handful of them there too, who thought victory is more important than law.
It is, isn't it?
I will, as the loser here, as the perpetual loser here, I will fight on the side of Odin on this side of the river, and I will die when Loki comes with a flaming sword and the righteousness will follow me to Valhalla.
Shockingly, Andrew Heaton, the man who wishes there was a printed code of conduct for when to yell at bars, also takes election law very seriously. There's an old adage in Chicago that sure, we manufacture votes, but only enough to counter what they're manufacturing downstate.
Right.
And that is
the death of the Republic.
Well, I don't know if it's the death of the Republic that we've been dying since we began, right? Like I do think that there is always some level of malfeasance in politics in general, beyond America. I do also think that our system is so Byzantine and weird. It's hard to cheat in a presidential election because you would have to know what counties, what cities, what states are the ones that would tilt the election and then go from there. The Trump stuff was absolutely slapdash. It was pathetic that he couldn't just take the L. And at the same time, let me say electorally, it was a super weird election. It was a super weird election because we changed the rules on exactly who could vote and when they could vote and how they could vote. A lot of systems that were not prepared previously to handle those kinds of votes were now doing them en masse. And pattern wise, there was weird stuff. I mean, all of the Trump bleeding aside, when Florida and Ohio go in larger margins for a candidate, historically, that means that that person wins. That happened in 2020. It was a combo breaker. Trump lost. I'm not saying that that proves that he won. I am saying that it is weird. It was a weird thing. None of that negates what Andrew said. And that is something that I do think we need to hold the line at a certain point and say, hey, this is bad. This is bad behavior. And if it goes from just grousing about Facebook ads like Hillary Clinton did, or even refusing to concede like Stacey Abrams did and Donald Trump did, then to something like this, where you're actively trying to use every legal remedy to subvert the election, then that there should be a moral, if not legal, consequence to that. So,
and I'll give that, a little bit of a bone to the MAGA Republicans. A lot of them, for those reasons you mentioned, it was an irregular election between COVID and everything else. There were just oddities about it. It's important that the American people believe that elections are legitimate. That's why I'm so angry at Trump for delegitimizing the election. But by that same token, for the people that are on that side that are going, my cousin voted twice, et cetera, et cetera. I would love to have mechanisms in place to ensure that elections are safe and secure and valid, and that everybody participating in them believes that their vote was treated equally and fairly. And I'll go a step further and say, like, the Republican frequent claim of voter fraud being perpetrated and the need for heightened voting security rings true to me because we just had voter fraud perpetrated by the president. So at that point, if we're doing that, the highest echelons of government will engage in voter fraud, which is what happened or what attempted to happen. I don't mind having various mechanisms in place to try and ensure people that their votes are actually being taken care of and that kind of thing. So I wouldn't mind having ways to try to infuse some more scrutiny and therefore confidence into the system moving forward.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why I'm finding this to be useful, but I still want to wait on my judgment, because if nothing comes out of this, if we have all of these hearings and yet the Electoral Count Act stays the same and none of these people are put in jail, the Justice Department does nothing, then this is a complete waste of our time. And it's just a miscarriage of justice to know that this was this big of a deal and nothing was done. So hold on, Justin's getting all excited.
No, I know. I'm agreeing with you. We found the agreement, because okay, this is probably something that I have not articulated. I'm assuming nothing's going to happen. I'm assuming no one's going to get indicted.
So
I'm assuming that this is not going to happen. So that is part of it. Go on.
Yeah. So that's the thing. If at the end of this, asses end up in jail, we get a different, you know, system for doing what was done on January 6th, like inside of Congress, not the riot, but, you know, the Electoral Count Act is a problem. And so if this Congress, after all of this, decides to not make any laws to solve the problems that they are exposing, then I'm more with you, Justin. But that's the type of thing we just have to wait and see.
Except for the fact that they've already declined to do anything on the Electoral Count Act, despite the fact that that was brought up as a bipartisan solution months and months and months ago. They decided not to. Now, maybe they go back and do it later. Also, it does bear mentioning that Congress can only make referrals to the Department of Justice. It is the Department of Justice that would have to choose to prosecute those things. So for whatever sure. You think of this, then that they do not
step
have the
up,
power
Merrick
to
Garland.
Put people.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, he's in
Here's your
Ukraine.
Chance. I know you've been angry. Merrick Garland, yeah. I know you've been doing push-ups looking at a poster of Brett the other justice, right? Well, here's your chance. Here's your chance to really lay it to him.
Gorsuch. I think Gorsuch got his
yeah.
seat.
Good yeah. guy, Gorsuch. I like Gorsuch.
Which, by the way, I bet that he has a dartboard with Mitch McConnell's face on it. Because it's not Gorsuch's fault. It's Mitch's fault that he's not on the Supreme Court.
Well,
true. That is true. You're right.
I think it's probably Hillary's fault.
Also true.
You know, maybe she should have run a better campaign. Speaking of campaigns, there's a lot of money in politics, friends. Sometimes your candidate doesn't have so much to spend on during your primary. So what are you going to do with it? Well, one option is to try and choose your opponent in the general. Here's an example that will play out before we have our next episode. In Colorado, a Democratic left-wing super PAC is spending at least $800,000 to affect the Republican primary. The group is currently running an ad burnishing State Representative Ron Hanks's conservative credentials. So they are running an ad that does not look like a Democratic ad. It just looks like an ad for Ron Hanks, a spot that GOP strategists say will undoubtedly boost the underfunded effort in the Republican primary that will take place on June 28th, next Tuesday. Hanks believes that President Donald Trump won the 2020 election, that all abortion should be outlawed, and he has raised $38,000 throughout the course of his Senate campaign.
That's only $38,000 more than I've raised, and I'm not even running.
Yes. In fact, I think if he were to look at your Patreon, he'd be like, damn, give me some tips. Hanks has also never placed a TV ad of his own. He is up against Joe O'Day, who many in the GOP think could have a shot at winning unaffiliated and disaffected Democratic voters in November against current Senator Bennett. Hanks is not the only beneficiary of mainstream Democrats attempting to elevate MAGA hardliners. In Pennsylvania, Democratic gubernatorial nominee Josh Shapiro ran an ad bolstering the Trump credentials of Doug Mastriano, who eventually won the GOP nomination. By the way, both Hanks and Mastriano were in D.C. on January 6th, although I do not believe either of them entered the Capitol themselves. So here's the question. Is attempting to pick your opponents in general dirty pool? And is it any different when you are directly benefiting candidates for which we have all just expressed our opinions on what happened leading up to January 6th and MAGA candidates in general? Heaton.
Yeah. So here's, because I was giving the Republicans, or at least a subset of them, a hard time for a minute, allow me to crap on Democrats for a minute. Hey, Democrats, your party right now, as Justin's describing this, would rather have a beatable, batshit crazy Republican party than a competitive, moderate, sane Republican party. I want you to think about that. They would rather have a crazy, probably defeatable party than a sane party that's competitive. And that should raise a lot of questions about our dumb fuck two-party sclerotic system. I don't think this is any dirtier than a lot of the other shit going on, Justin. I don't think this is any dirtier than gerrymandering and ballot suppression and all of the other fun things that the parties do to stay in power, because both parties, Republican and Democrats, are run by sociopaths whose top goal is to beat the other party. Everything else is secondary to that. Helping America, great. If we beat the other party, we'll get to that. But beating the other party is always the top thing. And this is a great example of that. And it feeds into this awful, increasingly polarized, horrible system that about a third of us have just full on checked out of and become independents on. And it is further evidence to me that we really need solid structural reform to keep this kind of shenanigan from happening.
I will point out that both of these were done by super PACs, which are illegal. It is illegal for campaigns to communicate with super PACs.
Oh, in that case, wink, the Democrats wink, are wink, completely wink, innocent. I don't remotely think any of them had anything to do with it. Never mind. I retract my statement.
They are all Democrats. Like, they're Democratic political action committees.
Right.
But because of McCain-Feingold, wink, 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 wink.
Yeah, there's a
PACs are not allowed to wink, wink, wink,
the,
wink, wink,
talk to campaigns. The sociopaths aren't allowed to talk to each other. The elected sociopaths can't talk to the sociopaths.
And it definitely never, ever, ever happens, he said sarcastically.
I just keep thinking that this is exactly what Hillary did with Trump. That's what we learned in the emails. It was the Pied Piper strategy, where it was like, he's so crazy that there's no way that he can win. So they wanted Trump to be the nominee. And this rings similar to me, just showing me that this party has learned nothing.
Do you think that, that the act itself is bad idea? Is a bad idea, Jen? Or there should be some sort of law?
Sorry, what was your question?
Do you think that the idea of trying to fund, because it's one thing to just be internally talking and saying, oh boy, I bet you we could win against the crazy guy again, instead of the moderate guy. That's one level of hubris. The other side is, oh, let's tell the PAC to make ads benefiting this dude and possibly getting him to the general. Do you think that is something that is a step beyond just the idle chatter?
No. I mean, I'm against financially funding candidates anyway. So it's like, however you want to spend your money, I don't really get emotional about that. It's just a different strategy for the same stupid idea that they had in 2016 with Trump. They're just doing it on a Colorado local level and just learning nothing from the past.
Hello, Colorado Democrat. I'm the devil and I have a monkey's paw. I'd like to donate to your campaign. Would you like this monkey's paw? Now you can make any wish you want on this monkey's paw to help your campaign. Goodbye. I'm the devil.
I'm really glad you relaxed on this trip, Heaton. I feel like you seem so languid.
I just grew my testosterone
refreshed.
Back. That's all. I was able to recharge, yeah. Grow a third testicle.
Apparently you were out in the woods like Rocky was in Rocky V. Like you have come back renewed with a inner fire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm against this largely because it's shitty politics. It is a bad idea. Any money that you are not spending telling the voters that you need to come out and vote for you and the independents that you need to sway about your candidate and what your candidate is going to do and why it is urgent for your candidate to get voted on is wasted money. You don't try and choose your opponent. It's the other party's job to choose their opponent. And as much as you want to try and play God, it is just bad strategy, in my opinion, to do anything but continue to drum beat the narrative that you are trying to tell about the person you are trying to get elected. It is really stupid.
Yep.
Agreed.
There we go. Okay.
I direct you to my devil's monkey paw statement from earlier.
And by the way, Doug Mastriano, who is the one in Pennsylvania, I think he has a good shot at beating Josh Shapiro, who ran an ad trying to bolster Mastriano through the Republican primary. That one worked. Mastriano is now the nominee. And the first poll that came out had Mastriano within 4 points. And there's evidence to say that was a fairly Democratic leaning poll. So be careful what you wish for. I wonder if President Vladimir Zelensky was guiding his country through an active war, thinking, boy, I loved the comedic stylings of There's Something About Mary. And I still remember the
Meet
first
the
time
Falkers.
I saw the Ben Stiller Show and Meet the Fockers. Of
Zoolander.
Course. And Zoolander. Oh, what great comedies. If only I could meet the man behind them all, Ben Stiller. Because if that's the case, then his dream came true this week as Ben Stiller visited Vladimir Zelensky in Kyiv, Ukraine. He did so as part of the United Nations Refugee Agency on World Refugee Day. He's the latest in a parade of world leaders and now celebrities who have come to visit with Zelensky, who is, again, currently in an active war with Russia. They also had this classic exchange, quote, Stiller to Zelensky, you quit a great acting career for this. Replying Zelensky, not as great as you. Stiller responded, no, but pretty great. But what you've done and the way you've rallied the country and for the world, it's really inspiring. Which can only mean that if indeed it was Zelensky and not Stiller who had been cast in Dodgeball, maybe he wouldn't be in this mess in the first place. So the reason why I brought this up is because Joe Biden got a question this week about whether or not they were worried about Ukraine fatigue, that there are so many domestic issues that are currently front of mind for American voters, that the desire to defend even a nation in peril like Ukraine is going to fade as gas prices continue to go up and the price of food continues to go up, blah, blah, blah. He said that we need to focus on defending democracy, the kind of line that he has had before. But it made me wonder, when the celebrities start showing up, have we moved out of the, like, we're not in the grainy webcam footage of Zelensky in an undisclosed basement somewhere. It seems like the urgency has been let out of the balloon a little bit, which I do wonder if it does affect the American people's thoughts on this. Jen, you have spent a lot of time researching Ukraine and the American government. What's your take?
The whole thing is just jump the shark. I mean, I just think of the person that's hardly paying attention. And then you see Ben Stiller hanging out with the president of Ukraine in Ukraine. And I think the question would be like, isn't that kind of dangerous? Like, how is it okay that this guy is in the war zone with the president if we're being told that this is a mortal danger to this country that we're sending billions and billions of dollars to? So I don't think that it helps their message at all to make it seem like Kyiv is a safe place to be. And just, I don't know, the whole cheerleading for Ukraine thing, I got kind of sick of it right from the beginning, because I get annoyed when people support war efforts knowing absolutely nothing about them. And this feels very that to me, just more cheerleading, more it's war propaganda, you know, like getting celebrities on board. It's the same way that you hire a Kardashian to get your skin product across. Like, you're hiring Ben Stiller to go and shake hands with a guy we're all supposed to support. It's just, it's all icky.
Jen's idea then, Logan Paul to Kyiv. Your thoughts, Heaton?
So fun fact, this last Sunday was Father's Day, right? Mm-hmm. I had reception in the woods. My brother called me and he goes, I made contact with this dude in the Ukrainian army. I can't remember his name, but he's like, for $50, he'll paint Happy Father's Day Judge Heaton on a bomb. You want to get in on this? I was like, huh. So there are people that are participating in this. I'm going to split the difference with Jen. Not that Jen said this.
No. Pause right there. Did you do it? Yeah, did you do it?
I mean, it's a pretty good Father's Day present. And my dad does hate Vladimir Putin. So yes, I went $25 in on this.
Did you get the picture?
Well, see, because we did it kind of late, Adam's not sure if it's going to be, we'll follow up on this. It's going to happen either way.
How sure are you that this just wasn't a scam to get $50 from you?
20% sure. I do not know if this, I would say this seems like a situation that is rife for scammery. So in regards to.
Wow, Andrew.
Putin in Ukraine. I'm rooting for Ukraine. Putin is in the wrong. I think that this is not that morally ambiguous, although I do think it gets much more complicated when we get into how the United States has set up the system over there that could lead to these things, making a distinction between that which is ethical and that which is prudent. Having established that I don't like Putin and I like Ukraine and I'm rooting for them in this conflict, I share Jin's position on Hollywood celebrities meddling in politics. I first of all think Hollywood's full of shit. I think it's been that way for a long time. We're talking about the same people that were giving awards to Harvey Weinstein and doing all sorts of questionable things so long as they got applause and love out of it. I don't think that Hollywood is the moral paragon it appears to be. And I don't think they know what the hell they're talking about. I don't understand why celebrities are thought to have interesting opinions on topics that they know nothing about. Like, if you've never read a book on economics, I don't want to know your hot take on economics. You have to read one book on economics before I have a conversation with you about political economy. Otherwise, we're just trading bumper stickers, right? Ben Stiller might very well be doing good things over there. He might be raising money for charity. If he is, my hat is off to him. If he's doing functional things that are helping people.
He was there by way of the United States Refugee Agency. So great, like there he is. A part of an apparatus for which visiting various places where refugee crises are happening. Yeah, so it wasn't just plugging season one of Severance.
Right, which was fantastic, by the way. Severance is so good. Absolutely great.
Severance was great.
Everybody watch Severance.
Whatever criticism we have for Ben Stiller going to Ukraine is the absolute opposite for our thoughts on season one of Severance.
Well, no, actually, I'm not even going to pick on Ben Stiller. Like, the other celebrity thing I have, this is a longstanding problem I have with a lot of people. I am bothered when people do moral grandstanding that costs them nothing because they're going to get applause out of it.
That bothers me when people, you know, go on, and it doesn't matter what the thing is, even if I agree with the thing, I just it bugs me when people do something with zero sacrifice and then want to gain prestige through it. Right. And I see that a lot in Hollywood, where people will have, there's a designated hot take we've all decided to have. They'll come out and they'll say that, and then they're on the good team and everybody's supposed to love them. Now, Ben Stiller, if he's over there helping refugees, my hat is off to him. Good job, Ben Stiller. He is doing productive work over there. Good. But in general, I don't like celebrities. I guess that's my broad statement. I don't like Putin or celebrities.
Yeah, and I want to kind of clarify why this all gives me the icks, because it's not like I'm on Team Putin here. I really do care about the Ukrainian people, and I think the best thing for them is to have the bombs stop dropping on their homes. And I think the fastest path to that is negotiations. And I've been saying this since the first minute. And right now, that's not the policy that this administration is pursuing. So I think by being a face of the partnership that Zelensky has with the Biden administration, going and telling him that, you know, you're a hero and all these things, like, that's where I see this as war propaganda, as a he's helping the Biden administration with their policies. And I feel like these policies are kind of self-serving, because the Biden administration, my last episode was all about this. They have a lot of motivations for wanting to keep this war going. And so if I was in the Ben Stiller position, I would have to think long and hard about, do I want to be a person that is helping this administration with these policies? Do I know these policies? Are they things that are going to help the Ukrainian people and create fewer refugees or allow people to come to their homes? Right now, there's a lot of people that can't come home because the bombs are still dropping. So there's a lot of implications for this. And like you said, I just don't think that a celebrity like Ben Stiller has done the due diligence of understanding what he's shilling for by going there. And that's why it gives me the icks.
I mean, but that's in the grand tradition of celebrities being involved at all in politics, right?
True.
And like, that is just kind of what it is.
To preempt some hate mail, Jen, you are not saying that Vladimir Putin is a good guy, or that he is morally equate to anybody in Ukraine, rather that you are preferring to not drag out the war effort and it might be prolonged by current policies?
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yes. And if you want an expanded version of why I say that, I did a 2-hour episode on it. I played clips from hearings and the Biden administration. They have multiple reasons why they want to keep this going. And it mainly comes down to this global economic system. You know, we have these battles of economic systems, the ones that we're trying to make global, and then the one that China and Russia are now competing with us with, like, that this whole Ukraine thing is a proxy war for that. And without having that understanding of the big picture, I just feel like people like Ben Stiller should, you know, go and sling skincare products.
Make Severance season two.
It was so
mostly
good.
That's really what we gotta give him.
He is a talented director, and an excellent straight man as a comedian. I don't like him when he's playing the buffoon. I didn't enjoy him in Zoolander, but I like him when he's a straight man. He was very good in Something About Mary and Meet the Parents.
Oh yeah, I like him when he's a buffoon too. I'm a big Ben Stiller fan. I love the Ben Stiller show. One of the greatest sketch comedy casts of all time. It was Stiller, Garofalo, Andy Dick, and Bob Odenkirk. But yeah, only went one season. This has been my segment of arcane sketch comedy knowledge.
Jen, to your point, I've got a foreign policy week that I'm planning on doing sometime this month, where I'm going to bring on a non-interventionist and an interventionist. I've already interviewed William Crystal, not Billy Crystal, which would be amazing, but William Crystal of the Bulwark was nice enough to talk to me. It was a good conversation. I don't see eye to eye with him on a lot of things. And one of the things that reminds me of what you're describing, Jen, is he brought up America. I think the Soviet Union was going to collapse under its own dumb fucking weight because communism doesn't work. And it defeated itself. Mr. Crystal thinks that Reagan defeated it, and that happened largely because we ran up their military budget by these various proxy wars. And he cites Afghanistan as an example of that, of Afghanistan was able to bleed them dry. And I was thinking, well, that really sucks for Afghanistan, doesn't it? That we got them sucked into a Soviet war to try and bleed the monster out. I feel kind of bad for all those peasants that got sucked into that.
Well, yeah. And go ahead and look in my show notes for your episode, because we have the defense secretary, Lloyd Austin, confirming that is the strategy, or one of the reasons behind it, is they think that the longer this goes on in Ukraine, it'll bleed Russia and Russia won't be able to wage war anymore. Like, this, prolonging this is the policy.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, on that sunny note, we want to remind you guys that you
Severance
can email
season
us.
Two. Check it out.
You can email us your thoughts on Severance season one or two, or your
Hold
theories
on, boys.
For two.
Can you just tell me where you watch this thing? Because I've never even heard of Severance.
It's on Apple TV. It's absolutely fantastic. I won't make a plug for it, but I devoured that in 3 days. I am very much a sci-fi connoisseur. It is excellent sci-fi. Check out Severance on Apple TV. I receive no monetary benefit from plugging it on the show.
We're not wrong pod at gmail.com is where you need to send your emails, because you're not wrong. A 911 dispatcher wrote in. I just wanted to chime in real quick about the 911 system.
This
I am a 911 operator.
I know. Hi, Irma. 911
dispatchers.
Okay, wait for it, Jen. Wait for it. Not only, but I've recently went to a trade show for 911 technologies. Jen is absolutely right. This technology exists. It's out there, but getting it in the hands of actual emergency operators, it's a whole nother conversation. Just to note that the computer-aided dispatching system I work off is antiquated, to say the least. It freezes frequently and sometimes crashes after a forced restart. Copy and pasting simple things is a multi-step ordeal and sometimes doesn't work at all. Ugh. Jen is right. Without state and local governments being required to do things like upgrading, not a lot will be done. And even though I resent Jen's Irma comments, it's a career I am proud to call my own, and I look forward to working on solving some of these issues.
I love the Irma. I didn't mean it as an insult. I just want you to get all the tools you need. So
Jen's
thanks for doing that job.
Jen's unrelenting assault on 911 operators continues. Her reign of terror now in week three.
I feel like I've been advocating for 911 operators to get their tools. Is it because I chose an old-timey name? Like, if I chose a cooler name, would people stop being insulted?
My territory, Jen. You stay the fuck out of my territory. I do the old timey shit.
I think it's the way that you say Irma's. You just say,
yeah, because you're basically saying old say Karens is what you're saying with Irma.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of Irmas trying to Irma their way around Irma Town.
Well, that wasn't my intention. I love my 911 operators. You
see,
literally
now we're gonna
saved
have
my
to,
life.
Now we're gonna have to do merch. Dial 911 for Irma merch now.
I picture somebody sitting behind a desk like a Gucci genetically engineered supermodel, cheekbones like high polished granite cliffs, and piercing eyes. And I won't even think to name this person preemptively. All I'll do is thank you for your service.
You See? Kiss ass.
A gun owner wrote in, I was watching a documentary about the Fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints on Netflix the other day. For those of you who are not aware, like I was not, that is a breakaway Mormon sect that continued the practice of polygamy, among other things, long after it was shunned by the main LDS. The documentary centered around a gentleman named Lloyd Wall, a former member of the FLDS, and he had a quote that I thought was worth sharing. To give a little context, Wall is referring to the time period when the leader Warren Jeffs took control of the church and began cracking down on what few liberties members actually had. Among those crackdowns were women had to wear prairie-style dresses, difficult hairstyles that had to be maintained, forced tithing in large sums, further reclusion from the outside world, and eventually forced migration to Short Creek, Ohio. Also, forced underage marriage, all of which was tolerated by the people until the final step that went too far, forced removal of all the firearms. Wall in the documentary says, quote, "That's when it went too far, when he made me give up my guns." End quote. So that was just a little anecdote in terms of how seriously some people take the right to bear arms. All those things were, cost of doing business until they got to taking
the
guns away.
The next thing we're going to do is be giving all of our money to a bunch of polygamists who marry underage women. Or prairie dresses, no less.
Twisted.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
Hey, shout out to the Mormons. On the Mormon spectrum, the standard garden variety Mormons are the fun ones.
Oh, true. Yeah.
There's
Shout out to all of our Mormons.
Yeah. Well, So I went to, there were a bunch of Mormons in my high school growing up, and I really researched it. There were a bunch of breakaway sects at the beginning. The one that we know as the Church of Latter-day Saints is the largest.
But there were other various folks that were, you know, deputies to Smith that went off and created their own churches and things. And I'll also give a shout out too. Don't think I'd practice polygamy. I'm having a hard enough time just getting a girlfriend, let alone having multiple wives. But for folks who practice polygamy, I don't give a shit. Why is that illegal? If you're consenting adults, have a big old fuck pile and have contracts with everybody where you, I don't care, form a co-op that's naked and bangs itself. This is not something the government should be regulating.
I actually agree with that.
I think my beard has grown 3 inches since I started talking to you for this podcast. You are so charged up, Heaton. It is you are like a raging bull in a pen. You've already called for
racing
like
towards the fuck pile.
I know, dozens of people to be jailed. You've crowned yourself the devil. You are looking to dive Scrooge McDuck style into a fuck pile. This is an aggressive Andrew Heaton, the likes of which I don't think I've ever heard.
I
should go to the mountains more often. That's what I should do. Maybe, I don't know if it's a camping thing. I hope it's not a heat thing. I hope it's not just me being in 70 degrees, but either way, I do feel charged up. I do feel renewed.
Pause. Heat is 70 degrees in late June for Andrew Heaton.
No. No.
He receded from the heat.
It's not that I'm just all okay. Temperate and limp-wristed when I'm in Austin due to the excessive heat. That is, for I live in Austin, but I love Austin. I hope that is not the case. I hope it's merely camping.
I've seen you in temperate weather where you were also limp-wristed. So I feel like this is probably got something else.
I just need to go camping a lot.
You just need to commune with whatever spirit god that you did with, and that's where your powers are renewed from. By the way, Jen, I feel like maybe we need some sort of credit or points. You were skeptical that the gun bill was going to pass. And as of last night, it looks to be the bill is out. It was voted on. It was voted on by more than 10 Republicans. And there do not seem to be a lot of hurdles for it making its way through the mechanisms of government. As of now, have you changed your skeptical opinion?
I mean, it was a procedural vote. When it passes the Senate, I'll feel more confident in it. I'm feeling more aligned with you last week than I am this week, but nothing's done in Congress till it's done. Cause we have ridiculous congressional schedules. So, like we all do, they're taking 2 weeks off for the 4th of July.
I mean, come on. What are they peasants?
Yeah,
of course they're taking 2 weeks.
So, just timeline wise, that would be 6 weeks if there's not another mass shooting in the next 2 weeks, which is a big if in the United States. But if there isn't, that's 6 weeks away from the actual event. A lot of things can happen. John Cornyn went home, got booed by Republicans. So like until this is
He pushed this after that, which I do think that the booing put him in a no-win situation where he had to push it.
But that's one person. I don't think that he's the end all be all, but I think that there are Republicans who can get spooked. I think weird things can happen in the House. Like I will celebrate when it's done. It's not
that you think that this is worth celebrating.
I'll be like, okay, good. They did like a little bit of something. Well, like the boyfriend loophole, I think that's worthwhile. That alone is worth passing into law. So is this crumbs? Yes. But do I want them? Yes. So,
yeah. Well, there we go. Okay. Steadily less skeptical is Jen Briney a little bit. Heaton, what you got coming up? By the way, the gun episode that you released, rave reviews.
Thank you. So good, Andrew.
People have said it was fantastic. I haven't listened to it because I'm jealous of how good you are.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I've been very, very, that was, I literally went on vacation to deal with the amount of math I had to read for that episode. It was a lot of intense research, but I've been very pleased with the response from that. For folks that are unfamiliar with it, I did a 2-hour deep dive on gun deaths and the most efficacious gun solutions. And I tried to go from a perspective of let's look at the numbers and from there come up with solutions, as opposed to kind of gut feelings on how I think guns should operate and going from there, which is, I think, how a lot of gun control conversations go and a lot of gun rights conversations go. So I focused on the numbers and I'm very pleased to be doing yeoman's work research on behalf of the audience. And then this week, I did a complete 180 and I interviewed a treasure hunter.
So if you want to talk to, if you want to listen to a show about the economics and laws of treasure hunting, it's an hour long conversation with a treasure hunter. We talk about old Spanish gold and who owns it and if it's worth trying to get it. It was a fun thing to have.
I do want to add something about your gun episode to anyone who hasn't heard it yet. I learned so much. It's totally worth your time. But if you're not a Star Trek fan, stick with it. There's a lot of Star Trek in the beginning.
There's a lot of Star Trek in the first 15 minutes, but I promise we get into the gun stuff after. The title of the episode on The Political Orphanage, my program, is A Spock and Scotty Approach to Gun Policy.
That's what you named it?
Yeah.
It's either gun policy. No, it's gun control. Spock and Scotty Approach to Gun Control.
My word. My gracious.
If you don't mean, know who these people are, he does explain quite well, like, what that means. But yeah, it's Andrew, you're a unique soul and I love
it. Thank you.
But great job on that episode.
Thank you so much.
Excellent.
Briony, what are you working on?
So congressional dish this week, we're going to talk about the baby formula shortage, which is still happening, but it's spotty all over the country. So I found out why it's like some states and not others. Turns out this is a much bigger deal than just baby formula. It turns out once again, our government is dysfunctional when it comes to regulating specifically food safety. And we have a monopoly issue when it comes to baby formula, like the whole market is distorted. So it was a bigger story than I was expecting it to be. And that will be out by the end of June.
And on Friday's episode of the Politics program, you will hear my breakdown of the coming war on the GOP side in 2024. Yes, Ron DeSantis not seeking a endorsement from Donald Trump for his gubernatorial run. Is that the beginning of the titanic feud to determine who is the true leader of the Republican Party? Find out on Friday's episode of PX3.
How embarrassing for Republicans that those are the choices. God.
I am hoping for a fusion ticket of Phil Scott from Vermont, Republican governor, and Jared Polis from Colorado, Democratic governor. That's my dream ticket. Gentlemen, get to it.
Start kissing. All right. That's it for us. For Jen Briney, Andrew Heaton, and myself, we're not wrong.
I'm going to go punch a bear. Goodbye.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.